I hate to tell you this, but it turns out that traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. I know, very disgusting. Not only is it extremely gross, but it also leads to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require up to 3 times less laundry. If you get hot at night, you'll appreciate Miracle Made's self-cooling properties, which makes use of silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA. If it's good enough for the astronauts, it's good enough for me. They are thermoregulating and designed to keep you at the perfect temperature all night long. It makes a huge difference in getting better sleep every night. If you hate sleeping in bacteria, which I'm sure you do, or you're looking to get rid of your worn and uncomfortable bedding, you should check out Miracle Made. You'll feel like you're tucked into a luxurious hotel fancy bedding situation, but it'll be a lower cost than some of those other brands. Go to trymiracle.com/thestacks to try Miracle Made sheets for you or a lucky loved one. Order today and save over 40%. Plus, if you use our promo code THESTACKS at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that it's backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you aren't 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiraclemade.com/thestacks and use the code THESTACKS to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/thestacks to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Welcome to The Stacks, a podcast all about books. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and today for the Stacks Book Club, we're joined again by the wonderful actress, comedian, and podcast host, Tawny Newsome. We're discussing Home Fire by Camila Shamsie. I'll go ahead and say this now, there are a ton of spoilers this week, so please read the book first and then listen. Trust me, you want to read this book. Before we get going, here's your reminder to follow the Stacks on our social media platforms. Find reviews, lists, and more bookish content there. Links to all of our social media accounts are in the show notes. You'll also find links to everything we talk about on today's episode in the show notes. And shopping through these links gives the Stacks a small commission at no cost to you. So if you're shopping anyway, why not help out a bookish podcast? If you love the Stacks, consider joining the Stacks Pack. It's a group of folks who help support the work we do on this show in exchange for perks. We have a virtual book club that meets every other week. You get shout outs on the show. You get to find out about our guests in advance and a lot more. And most importantly, you get to know that you're helping out a bookish podcast that you love become a reality. So go to patreon.com/thestacks to join. If a monthly subscription isn't your thing, you can also do one-time contributions by going to paypal.me/thestackspod. Please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review this show. It goes a long way to helping us reach new audiences and in turn be able to book more exciting, diverse guests. So if you haven't yet, take a moment to rate and review the show. Our latest review comes from Andrea Bro, and she says, I am thrilled to have listened to my first episode of The Stacks. I've been a book lover all my life. Started my first book club, the Nancy Drew Mystery Book Club, when I was 8 years old. I was writing the list of books you were recommending fast and furious. I just hope I find the time. What can I say? So many books, so little time. Thank you, Tracy, for starting The Stacks. I am now a big and faithful fan. Thank you so much, Andrea. I appreciate all your kind words. And for the rest of you, take a moment, rate and review the show. It means so, so much, and it really does help. Okay, now it's time for our discussion of Home Fire by Camila Shamsie. And again, I just want to warn you, there are a lot of spoilers in this episode. So if you haven't read the book, take a moment, do it now. All right, y'all, we are back today with our lovely guest, Tawny Newsome, who is an actress, comedian, musician, and the co-host of Yo, Is This Racist? The podcast. And today for the Stacks Book Club, we're talking about Home Fire by Camila Shamsie. It won the Women's Prize in 2018, which is exciting. And it's a great book. It's basically a modern retelling of Antigone, which is a play by Sophocles. And it's set against the backdrop of terrorism and anti-Muslimness in modern London.
Which I did not know it was Antigone when we picked this book up.
I love that you didn't know that. So I knew it was Antigone, but I didn't remember Antigone.
I had the opposite weird thing happening where as we were reading it, I was going – actually, what first started to happen was we got to a place in the story that felt a little too far-fetched, whereas previously it had felt very realistic and very grounded, although dramatic and high stakes. And I was like, wait a minute. This is starting to get – and then I went, wait a minute. Why does this feel familiar? What is this, Shakespeare or something? Oh, no, it's Antigone.
It's a Greek tragedy.
Literally in the last maybe 30 pages of the book, 20 pages, I'm going – this is actually Antigone.
This is actually a Greek tragedy, and that's why it's dramatic.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the podcast again.
Thank you.
But let's say this now because I don't want to get any angry messages from anybody. We're spoiling the shit out of this one.
We're spoiling it.
I've given you plenty of time to read it. If you haven't read it yet, turn this off and read the book because it's really a good one.
Turn this off. Throw your phone out the window. Don't pick it up until you put it in a bathtub. Until you've read the book.
Yeah. And then come back and listen. So don't ruin your phone so you can come back and listen.
No, ruin your phone and then buy a new one and then come back and listen.
And subscribe to the podcast
on your new phone.
Exactly. Okay. What did you think of the book kind of generally?
I loved it. I loved it. I wanted more from certain sections because it is kind of like, it feels like four books or it feels like at least three. You know, you have these three movements. Coming from different people's perspectives, or four, I guess. And I wanted more from the Parvez section. I wanted more from the Yzma section in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I really fell in love with Yzma and thought she's going to be my protagonist. I thought we were following her. And then I was equally happy to have it turn to Anika. And I was like, oh, this is a totally different protagonist and someone I feel like I have less in common with because I'm not as young as she is and not as free and wild as she is. I felt more like akin to Yzma.
Yeah, I think so too.
But then I fell in love with that. And then we turned to Parvez and I was like, now we're really getting to the meat of it. And then I wanted more. So if anything, I wanted more from this book.
I totally agree. When the book started, I was like, oh, I could ride with this lady for a while. Like Yzma's my girl. Like we could do this. Mm-hmm. And then it switched to Eamon. And I was like, okay. It's like, you're cool. But then as his section merged with Anika and she became part of, and I was like, oh, I'm here for this romance. Like, and as I said, I didn't remember Antigone, so I didn't really know where it was going. All I knew is that it was going to end badly because I knew it was a Greek tragedy and I knew it was part of the Oedipus cycle.
I'm so glad I didn't know that because I held out hope.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Well, I was like, but I kept being like, how is this ending badly? Like, I was like, but so I think I got Antigone confused with Medea and I was like, oh my God, she's going to have kids with him.
Her head going to turn to snakes.
I was like, she's going to have, no, that's Medusa.
Wait, what?
That's Medusa. That Medea is the one who kills all her kids.
Oh God! Look at me, just trying to reach for a joke.
I think it landed. Honestly, it's actually better than whatever you were hoping for. But so I was like, oh, I was like, Eamon and Anika are gonna have kids, and then she's gonna kill their kids. Like this is crazy.
She like drowns the kids. Right?
Yeah, they have like I don't know. I don't really remember. Obviously,
in a chariot. I think
nobody tell my BFA police that I don't remember any of these Greek tragedies, but. So anyway, so I was like, oh, like what's going to happen? And then I was like, wait, I don't think this is the one where they kill the kids. Like there's still no kids. And then it started going like to the Parvez story. And I was like, wait, I think I was like wanting to know what happened because it's kind of written like a thriller.
Yeah. And like if I'm remembering Antigone correctly, this isn't like a one-to-one. This doesn't track with it.
No.
This is like picking up and expanding on more of the story before Antigone starts.
Right. Yeah. So in Antigone, it's like, the brother is already dead.
Yes, we never meet him
and
in the
so
play,
the whole
right?
Yeah, we don't meet him. So the whole play is a fight over burial rights
yes.
and civil disobedience, which is what this book becomes at the end.
Which is probably why at the end is when I started to go like, wait
what's
a
happening?
Minute.
This feels dramatic. But yes, like in Antigone, the character of Anika is Antigone. And then Eamon is Haman. And they're like betrothed. Mm-hmm. And Creon, which is Haman's father is the king and he's like, no, we don't bury these people. Mm-hmm. And they go on this like whole, she like secretly tries to bury her brother. And it's like all about civil disobedience and like the rule of the gods and what is right versus what is law. And so all of that does come out in this book, but not till later.
Right.
So it's like the first half of this book is just setting up this ending, which is kind of nice because in Antigone, you don't get that. Mm-hmm. You get the drama of the fallout for five acts. And in this, you get five acts differently. You get like much more build up. And then the last two acts are all the fallout, which is probably exactly where you were like, this seems familiar.
Yeah. And I loved it even more because it made me really fall in love with these people and, yeah, just want – yeah, I just had so much hope for all of them.
Yeah.
And my heart was just broken every time it didn't go the way I thought it was. My heart was broken with Yzma. Mm.
Me too. That end of that section, I was like, what are we doing here? Why are they brother and sister now?
I know. I was like,
kiss her. She loves you.
Just love her. Why are you teasing her? Why are you buying her coffee every day if you don't want to be with her?
And then also, like, what's that book?
Truly, that's a whole book I would read.
That's another book.
I would read the happy Yzma ending. And Eamon in Boston just trying to be immigrants and figure shit out.
Right. And, like, having a bunch of kids and not killing them.
Get on it, Shamsi.
Yeah, we need...
Come on.
More from you. You've only written 8 books. Like, can you do more, please?
Can you write more based on the one chapter from this book?
Thank you. So the structure of this book is 5 sections, which I'm assuming is supposed to mirror the 5 acts of the play.
Oh, look at that.
That would be my guess. But it also takes us to 5 different places because we're in Amherst, Massachusetts, not Michigan, Massachusetts. We're in London. We're in Turkey. We're in Pakistan. And we're in Syria.
Oh, I didn't track.
They're not the 5 acts. Don't break down that way. Right. But those are the 5. Because Parvez goes to Turkey. That's where he is ultimately killed when he goes to the consulate.
When he tries to escape. Yeah.
And then, but before he's in Syria.
Uh-huh.
And then the body and the ending is all in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was kind of cool that she, like, I liked the nods to structured dramas, like these 5 act plays. Like, I liked how that worked, and I thought her writing was so good.
It was really good.
Really good. Not too floofy, but also not too, like, just words.
Yeah, and I really felt like it, I felt like the characters came through in a way that allowed me to see, like, it's funny, there wasn't really humor in the book, but
there was.
There was, and it allowed me to see, like, what this character finds funny or what this character is flippant or whimsical about. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking specifically of Anika, and it made me feel like, oh, I know a person like that. And it, yeah, I loved that, as opposed to, like, oh, this author is trying to be hilarious.
Right. No, that's my kind of writing humor. I don't like haha funny. I like ooh, snarky.
Yeah.
Like, when Yzma's getting interrogated in that first scene, when she first gets to the airport before she even leaves, and they're like, she's talking about how her and Anika had practiced, and you know, this is, she should say that as an Asian she's impressed by the queen's color palette, and I was like, this is very funny, without being like, oh, I'm making a joke right now, please laugh, please. Cue audience laugh track. I felt like each section also had such good endings.
Oh, yeah. Wait, refresh my memory.
Well, so the first one was with her, with Yzma and Eamon, and it was like, oh, he's gone, and she cries. Mm-hmm. And then the ending with Eamon section, I believe, was when, like, he went to see his dad, and then he, like, couldn't get in touch with Anika. And Parvez's section, I believe, ended with him getting shot.
Yeah.
Or, like, going towards the consulate.
Mm-hmm.
And then Anika's section ended with her sitting in front of the consulate in Pakistan after having been like, hey, what's the phone number for the people with the body? Just like asking for a friend.
Yeah, just like no big deal.
And
just...
then obviously the book ends with the possible suicide, possible terror attack.
Oh, I didn't take it as a suicide at all.
Oh, you didn't? You didn't think there was any chance that she had something to do with it?
No, because it seemed to me like, well, actually, let's talk about it because, okay, so those men, they ran up to when Eamon got to the park to come be with her, be in solidarity with her. It didn't seem like he was going there to bring her back home.
No.
He was just going to be with her. And these men ran up and snapped a vest around him that he could not get off. So then I think knowing that, oh, is that what you mean by suicide? Just her end of it.
Yeah, like that she, like that it was like a murder suicide, like that she had something to do with it, as opposed to it being opportunistic terrorists who acted separately from her but knew that Eamon was a high profile target.
I guess I believe the latter only because she didn't know he was coming.
Okay.
She didn't have any communication from him or info.
But they knew he was coming.
They who?
Well, the people who put the vest on him.
Yeah, because when he like landed at the airport and stuff, like all that stuff goes up. But I don't feel like she has any way to know that, right?
I guess that's true.
She's just sitting next to a corpse and a bunch of ice.
Right.
By, she don't even have a cell phone.
She has nothing.
She's like in white clothes with like muddy rags. I'm like, yeah. Oh my God, girl is a mess.
So dramatic.
There's no, yeah. I think that's what I was like, wait a minute.
But also like that's like, imagine seeing that on the news. Cause like, you know, Rachel Maddow would be like cutting in and out so hardcore. She'd be going mm-hmm. between that and like Nancy Pelosi getting sworn in.
Yeah.
Like she'd be fully on both sides. Like she'd be like, here at home, Nancy Pelosi wore red. But in Pakistan,
yeah.
There's a girl covered in rose petals, mud, and a dead body on ice. Like, let's tune in.
Like a damn raw bar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't think she could have had anything to do with it, just logistically.
Okay.
But I do. Obviously, once he had it on him, she was like, come here. Are we going down together?
Yeah. I mean, she definitely wanted in.
Yeah.
Which I wonder about that too, because like then she whispers to him and smiles, and then he like kisses her on the forehead or something, and then they die. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if she was like, oh, this is a better out for me.
Maybe.
Because like she couldn't have had a plan really. Like what was her plan?
Well, I guess what did Antigone do? They just fought forever, and then eventually.
In Antigone, I believe the gods – well, I believe like the old man like went to Creon and was like, no, you need to bury this kid in the right place. Mm-hmm. The gods are angry. And then Antigone like killed herself.
Right. Which happened in this book too. The old man was actually Caramat's wife.
Terry.
She kind of fulfilled that role, right?
Yeah. It was with Terry, and then also like one of his like assistants, James or something, was like, you know, it's kind of tricky.
Yeah,
like,
maybe you should.
This is awkward.
I feel like in the movie, James would be like B.D. Wong or something. Just like in a sharp suit, like, sir. Or sir. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of people I would put to play James.
Yes.
It was a cute little role.
I liked James. But yeah, so okay. So you don't think it was a suicide. I don't know. Part of me is just like, well, if we're sticking with Antigone, there's got to be some like premeditatedness. But this book doesn't like stick with Antigone.
You're right. Yeah, I think I'm just stuck on the logistics of it, but I like where your head's at.
She clearly knew though, like that's like a bomber vest, mm-hmm. and I need to die. Like,
yeah,
this is the way to go.
Yeah,
this is the out that I need. This drives the point home.
Yep,
like that was calculated on her end.
I agree.
Because if she didn't want it to have happened, she could have run away too.
And yeah, then she would have been blamed for this very important person's son dying too. You know,
right? Like, oh my God,
her life would have been.
Whoa, I didn't even think about that. Act six.
Oh, yeah, because imagine like the wrath of Caramat Lone that
right.
after his son is killed coming to get you.
Right.
And you've broken all these other who knows laws. I don't even understand how laws work in this right. universe. But I mean, there's no redemption for you at this point.
No. And also, oh my God, the way that the ending was written. So right before, remember, they're in like – Aemon's sister, like Emily or something, I can't remember her name, she is visiting and they're like talking, and then one of his assistant secret service guys is like, we need to go into the bunker.
Yeah.
And then they're freaking out because they think they're gonna die.
Uh-huh.
And then he's like, oh, it was just a hoax. And they're like, how do you know it's a hoax? And they're like, because they said that they got you.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like jump cut, and then it changes how it's written, and it's like as seen through a television lens or something. And then it like describes the scene, but it doesn't use anybody's names. It's like he walks up in a blue shirt. Like she recognizes him. Two men come over. And like the way that it was like written like a script.
Yeah,
like
it was written
really
like
a scene.
I almost felt like it was written like a news anchor would be reporting on it.
Mm.
Because they played a lot, right, with the chorus. Mm-hmm. Like Twitter became the chorus. Mm-hmm. Everything became the chorus, which I think I'm double glad that I didn't realize it was Antigone, because I think reading it, I would have been a little annoyed at those. I always get annoyed at those modernizations.
Yeah,
of like,
I didn't even
what
think
to
of
do
that,
with
but
the
you're
chorus,
right.
You
yeah.
know? But yeah, like all the Twitter, all the like hashtags about mm-hmm. what did they call her, like Anika a Knickers or whatever.
Yeah.
They gave her like a slutty,
yeah,
slut
and then they called
name.
Like the lone wolf.
Yeah, like, yeah, which was very like, you know, what the world does now when
right.
things like this happen. So I was like okay with it as being like, this is what Twitter does. But if I had known it was
the Greek chorus,
yeah, I would have been very annoyed. Yeah, so I felt like it switched to like the news lens of that. Mm-hmm. But as soon as that Secret Service agent said they got the target, I knew.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's the other one.
Yeah. As soon as they said that. But at first, I just thought that something bad was going to happen there. But I didn't.
Oh,
I thought like maybe Isma was like going to – I thought maybe she was going to end up being the one who like killed everybody because she was like – felt like she had to protect her family or something.
Maybe.
Because like when they said that she was walking down the streets, and I mean that, so she's a really interesting character because she is, as far as like Antigone and in this book, she's like kind of the boring one.
Mm-hmm.
But she's so great. You need the boring one.
And like she was really comforting to me. I liked her pragmatism. I liked her, you know, it really resonated with me about how she was just trying to, she trying to become a doctor?
She was getting her PhD in like Muslim studies.
Oh, right. Doctorate.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just, to me, it was like, so this is someone who, she's not at all like lazy or not trying to fight the system, but she's trying to do it in a way that I really respect, where she's really trying to like change things with her strengths. And so she's trying to just get through the interview at the, you know, it's not mm-hmm. about having the interview at the airport and making them realize what a radical you are. It's about getting on the plane so that you can get to the other country,
right.
so that you can get through, so you can do your work, you know. And right. I was like, wow, I really resonate with that, because a lot of times we do want to burn it all down, but sometimes you have to be practical and
right.
quiet and go to your enemy's house, you know, when she went to Karamat's yeah. house to like talk to him human to human about what she needed.
Right.
Like, that's not easy to do.
No.
But often characters like that get painted as being, I don't know, not as exciting or weak. Right.
Well, that's like a scene we hear about. That's not the scene we often get to see. Like, often that's a scene where it's like, oh, by the way, her sister came to my house. Did you know? Okay. Yeah. And like, it's like, let's erase this person. I think that the theme of kind of like loyalty to family versus loyalty to your country was really interesting. And obviously, I'm not from Great Britain. And I'm not a Londoner and I'm not Muslim, but as a Black person in America, I think that there's a lot of parallels about who, you know, I think that's true probably for a lot of minorities in a lot of places, but specifically right now, given the crazy fear of Muslims and the crazy fear of Blackness that's happening in America, I think that this idea of like who are you as this quote unquote enemy of the country, and whose side are you on? And do you throw your family member mm-hmm. to the police so that they won't come and break down the doors in your house, mm-hmm. right? Like, do you tell on your little brother that he went to join ISIS because it's better for you and your sister, and there's a chance you have a chance or not? And I really thought that that was like tough.
Yeah. And something that, I feel like there's not a parallel that I can think of in my life where I've ever had to make a decision mm-mm. even remotely that difficult. But it is, yeah, because she made the hardest choice. And I feel like it's, you know, if the book had started with Anika's section
mm-hmm.
and we had seen Isma through that lens first mm-hmm. as being someone who had turned, or I guess no, Isma didn't know. So what, in which section do we learn that, or I'm sorry, Anika didn't know. So in which section did we learn that Isma had turned him in? In hers?
In Isma's section. But it was later in the section. This Anika called and was like, I heard what you did.
Oh, right. Yeah. So I guess I feel like if we had learned about her through Anika and then learned that information, we would see her differently. We'd see her as like a traitor to her family as right. opposed to like, being it made pragmatic. A lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like and given what we know about their history, like about the father having been a jihadi and mm-hmm. like knowing that was already like a stain on their family,
mm-hmm.
that of course she's going to do what she has to do with no mother and no grandmother anymore. It's like they're like orphans
yeah.
and they're marked, and she's older. And so she remembered.
Yeah.
Like she really remembered the police coming and like what they did after the dad left. In a way that I mean, Parvez says in his section, like, he doesn't really remember that much. He just remembers, like, there was this photo album and this police officer came and took it.
Yeah.
And then that came back at the end of the book where the police officer was, like, getting interviewed. And he was like, yeah, I took this photo album and I told them they should monitor these kids and I guess they'll never learn. And I was like, fuck you.
Yeah, that was rough to read.
That was hard. And, like, I guess I'm naive and dumb, but I didn't realize that, of course – governments monitor the children of people who go and join extremist terrorist groups in Syria or wherever.
Well, now, I mean, look, now they monitor a whole lot more than that. But it is naive to think that if anyone in your family or in your extended family does anything even remotely a threat or even talks about it online, mm-hmm. you most likely are also being monitored right. now.
But not if they talk about like going and shooting up a school.
I will disagree because...
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it is less for sure because there isn't that like Islamophobic whatever. Right. But there is a lot now, like if you're connected to anyone who
interesting
is starting to talk about these things, it is it, you're naive if you think they're not also looking at you because right. there is so much fear and we don't know how to we don't know how we say our government says they don't know whatever. I don't know what I'm talking about. What I'm trying to say is that
they're watching.
Everybody's watching you all the time and I'm trying to like sidestep saying some shit to like not reveal a personal thing got that it. A friend went through. But what I have noticed is that when you're brown, the scrutiny is 10 times worse.
Right.
And when you are not from this country, the scrutiny is 10 times worse. And if you are from a religion that we don't understand in this country, it is so much worse. So just reading Yzma's section and reading that she did that was like, of course you have to do that.
Of course you have to do that.
You've been through it.
That's right. And the part of the book where Eamon goes to his dad and he's like, you know, I met this girl and I really like her. And she's like from this neighborhood and she's like kind of friends with like, a guy who left. And he's like, oh, the Parvez family or like the Pasha family. And he's like, how did you know? And he's like, there's only one of those people. Like, how do you think I don't know? I'm the home secretary. And I was like, sure, Eamon is me.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, how did he know? And then I'm like, right, of course. He's like the home secretary, which I guess is a mix of Homeland Security, Secretary of State, Health and Human Services. Like, it's a combination job because it's in charge of like domestic things and also immigration related things from what my Google search told me.
Okay, great.
So because I wasn't quite sure if there was like a direct correlation to United States and there isn't exactly, like that job falls under a few
sure
headings in case you didn't know. In case you didn't know like me.
I did think that was a little I thought that was a little unrealistic of Eamon though, because you say that that's you, but your dad isn't right. that.
Sure. Sure.
I don't know. Maybe is your dad the Secretary of State?
No.
Okay.
Unfortunately, no, he's not. Well, I guess fortunately, but either right way, now, no. Yeah. Currently, no. Yeah, I guess you're right. Like, it just was like a moment where I was like, oh, he knows. And then I was like, oh, right. You're an idiot for thinking that he wouldn't know.
Of
like,
course he would know.
You're so dumb. But they do say Eamon's like an idiot, like naive. And
I just wonder how much naivete you could get away with when, like, I'm sure if you're that guy's kid, all of your texts and calls and everything are monitored anyway.
Right.
Which is why she knew never to call him.
Right. Which is why he was dumb. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, even if you're not family members with someone who's joined ISIS, like, you know, I doubt like Chelsea Clinton's boyfriends would like really want to be texting or like Malia and Sasha. Like, I don't know that you want. To be texting people that you're not super serious about because like mommy and daddy will find out.
Yeah. I mean, there are people who are like data scientists in a private company that happens to have a government contract and their like dating life is monitored or at least they go through like programs about like when you're dating someone serious, you have to like let us know and here's how to, you know, whatever. So it's like, you know, you're the son of this dude, you know. So I felt that was a little convenient of the book.
I see. Okay.
But
yeah.
I'm not mad at it.
I mean, it worked. It made it work. There was kind of like a fanciful part of this book that kind of made you suspend disbelief, which I also really liked because it made it more enjoyable. It made it move faster. Like if it had gotten stuck in like the ticky-tack of like, okay, so then they have to talk to the Secret Service guy, I would have been like, okay, can we just like, we get it. They're secret. Let's go. So I kind of like appreciated it too. One of the things I was the most obsessed with, and I think everyone in the book was the most obsessed with, was Karamat Lone, like that character and how she built him and what he was. Because to me, he was like Ben Carson.
Mm-hmm. Similar, yeah.
Or no, I guess that's too far. I would say he was like Van Jones. Right? Like sometimes he got the right answer and sometimes he had the totally wrong answer. But that's because he has mediocre at best politics, but like people on both sides like would claim him.
Yeah. And then people on both sides get very mad at him.
Right.
Yeah. And the double standard that he was facing of trying to overcorrect by being super hard on, you know, as he put it, Islamic extremists. And I felt I had empathy for him, but then I was so mad at his policies.
Right.
I was so mad, but I was also just like, I kind of get it because you are you wanted to get where you could get so that you could have influence. So you had to go hard. But then I'm like, well, then you're just pandering to all those right. racists.
And you're like a puppet. You're the person that the bad guys, if you want to simplify, which mm-hmm. I do, the bad guys hold up to say like, oh, I'm not racist. I have a black friend. You know, yeah. like, oh, I'm not Islamophobic. Like, I'm in the same party as Karamat Lone. Like, I voted with him on this, you know, and it's like, yeah, but then he gives that speech that like they mm-hmm. talk about where he says we're all great British and mm-hmm. we're all here the same, and if you, you know, are wearing extreme clothing or having old antiquated beliefs, like mm-hmm. you're the problem, and you know you can be here, and not that racism's gone, but that's not the problem, like. Fix it. Do right. better.
Like, you guys need to adjust how you are in order to live here peacefully.
Right.
Which is goes into a whole, like, I mean, it dovetails with, like, respectability politics, which I totally – is it, like, actually respectability politics? I never know how that's defined.
I don't – I think so. I mean, I think of it here as being American specifically – I mean, Black American specifically, but I would imagine that, like, Latinx people have – their own form of respectability politics, or like Muslim yeah. people, right?
I'm sure. I just didn't know if like the renouncing of a religion falls under that, or if it's more like pull your pants up, you know?
Right. Sure.
Don't somewhere, say the N-word.
Right. Right. But it is, I mean,
it is like a
form of it. If
yeah.
it's not
like
exactly
fall in line, it. Like fall in line in order to get the respect that you are owed and deserve as a human being.
Right. But I don't know a ton about the UK, and so I know it's a monarchy and it's a little bit different, but like, do they have freedom of religion there?
Mm-hmm.
So then, like, doesn't I this is something that I find crazy about America, is it's like we always talk about freedom of religion, but as soon as anybody does anything that's like different mm-hmm. with their religion, it's like, oh, if you want to fit in here, take off your this, or like, if you want to fit in here, then you can't, you know, observe the Sabbath, like
mm-hmm.
Otherwise you're Orthodox. Like, it's like, okay, but like, this is my religion, I'm just like trying to have dinner with my family on Friday.
Yeah No, it's a free society. Like, ours is a free society.
Right. But the monarchy.
Giant air quotes everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. But the monarchy is tied to religion, aren't they? They're the Church of England.
I guess. But also the monarchy, from what I understand, is like largely figurehead
right.
and don't actually govern. You know, they have they counsel with the PM
right.
and stuff.
But. Yeah. But I just wasn't sure if like there was a difference in their approach to religion, because it's like you're saying, yeah, don't wear the hijab, like you don't have to, and then you can fit in. It's like, yeah, but that's my religion, freedom of religion. Hey guys, what's up?
I don't know. I wonder. I also know, you know, like Great Britain is not really a country, like the United Kingdom, in the way that the United States is
right.
states, but the United Kingdom has like four separate mm-hmm. actual countries mm-hmm. within it. So I don't know. You're not asking people in the Highlands to take off their kilts. You're not
right.
asking Welsh people to not eat rare bit. Oh god, I'm reaching. But yeah, so I think it's kind of a weird thing that this brown person is telling other brown people to not be their
right.
religion, when they've clearly, I mean, like, Welsh people are very proud of being Welsh and not being English,
right?
And not even really caring to be called British. A lot of times they're like,
right.
I'm Welsh, and that's embraced from what I've seen
right
in my
but that's
travels
white.
There it's mostly white. There are a lot of black Welsh people, though. When I say a lot, I mean I saw some.
When you were there, you like found one?
I saw some. You know, there's like some there's some traditions of sailors and people from the West Indies that went there. And so there's like a heritage of black people that have stayed in Wales.
Okay.
It's kind of cool. You see like black Welsh people, you're like, hey.
Welsh accents are nuts.
I love them.
They're amazing.
I love Wales. It is one of my favorite places. I have a good friend who's from there, and we went this year, my first time there, and I was just like, this place rules. It's beautiful. It's weird. It's cheap. Everyone's nice. It's kind of creepy, because I think it's kind of like our American South, where sometimes you go and you're like, is everyone racist, or are you being really nice to me? You're handing me a pie. I think you like me.
Am I poisoned? Am I dead? My brother says I maybe just in England, but he says like the further north you go, it's like going south in America. But maybe that's
just England, because then like Scotland is a whole different bag.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, like I traveled the whole country twice this year because I had two weird different gigs. And so
okay.
I went from Scotland to Wales and like two weird different things. But yeah, I love it. I just have a better time in Wales because I think people are a little more relaxed.
Okay.
England feels a little just things are just a little tighter, you know?
Got it.
Of course, there's exceptions. I keep punching the microphone. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't use a microphone 20 times a week.
There's this cord. I know it's a pain. I'm sure you guys all hear it all the time. Who cares? This is independent podcasting, people. Hell independent. Yeah. Hello. It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for almost 4 years now, I have been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. They're at 52 iterations of their formula and counting. Their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and find the best quality ingredients available. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal. And trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they totally obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by covering my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds each morning. AG1 ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune system, which is so important for me, especially with the germs that the mini stacks have running around and going to a cesspool called preschool. I've stayed partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product, and I genuinely look forward to drinking it every single day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/thestacks. That's drinkag1.com/thestacks. Check it out.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
So I listened to this great podcast about race in America, and it was called Seen on Radio is the name of the podcast. And they did this whole thing called Seeing Whiteness. Mm. And it's a white guy who does it where I was like, ugh, eye roll, I hate you. Mm-hmm. But he's actually seems like a genuinely good guy who's like trying to figure out, because he's like, I've never seen whiteness before. I didn't realize, like, I didn't ever notice it. I didn't see it. So he does this whole thing, and he talks to like scholars on race and like the woman who wrote the book White Fragility and Ibram X. Kendi, who wrote Stamped from the Beginning. And he talks to people who like work at the anti-racists, all these groups. But one of the women, I wish I could remember her name, she talks about markedness. And so she says like marked is different and unmarked is normal. So she says, like, you know, have you heard of a historically black church? Like, is that something that's celebrated? Is that something that we talk about? Is that, you know? And then she's like, are there such things as historically white churches? And people are like, no. And she's like, well, there actually are. They just don't have plaques, and there's not a tour bus that takes you to them. But like, that's unmarked. And so we're saying, you know, that this unmarked thing is the norm, and that this other thing is the different thing. And that came up in this book when they were talking about being like Pakistani Londoners or like Muslim Londoners, and that there was like this adjective added that took away their Britishness. Mm-hmm. And I just like, that was something that really resonated with me, because I feel like I so often get adjective in front of adjective in front of adjective mm-hmm. before I get to like American. Like yeah. I'm like a
or podcaster.
Or podcaster, exactly. Like I'm like, I'm a black woman, Jewish.
Yeah.
Podcasting book lover. Like, but you can just get to be book lover. Like, how does that work, white lady? Like, how lovely for you.
Yeah, it's the white as neutral. Mm-hmm. It's the same argument. It's like that when you stop seeing white as neutral,
right,
then you can have a more diverse and inclusive whatever you're trying to do.
Right.
Because white's not the default.
Right. White is, has been become the default. But like they were even saying on this podcast is great. I highly recommend it. It's yeah, like 14 episodes. And some of it's like a little some of it I didn't love, but they talk about like Native American things and black things. And but one of the things that they said that I really liked was that so much of being white is about being an individual, mm-hmm. which is why white people get really upset when you say white people. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's like, oh, no, I'm not a white person. I'm Sarah. Mm-hmm. You're like, Sarah, you're a white person. Mm-hmm. But like people call me a black person all the time. I don't care. Like mm-hmm. I know that I'm part of that group. Like, and I understand that I'm also an individual, but like I'm also part of that group.
Yeah.
And that there's this like, that's why like a lot of white people say, you know, we need to start with the individual and it should be taught in the home, like not to be racist and this and that. And then when you ask people of color, they're like, the government could be doing better.
Yeah.
Like, it's we like, could have programs.
How lucky for you that you have all this time to just teach your one white child not yes. to be racist.
Right, exactly.
Great. That I might not meet him, right. so I'm going to need the government yeah. to control the rest of these
I
people.
I would love some help. Are there teachers in schools who could help with
Is
this?
Is there like a program we can set yes. up?
Is there somewhere I could send your whole family and everyone who's related to you?
And anyone and you've white. Met. Because I'm probably not going to meet your one very nice white child that you're yes. raising to be a very nice white boy.
Right.
And like, but congratulations. He's going to be great.
That kid becomes the president. Like, he's not helping me. Mm-mm. So I just thought that was interesting. And it really did. Like, I listened to it after I read the book and I was like, sure, this isn't just about race. This is about otheredness or markedness everywhere. This yeah. idea of like, who's responsible here? And I think karma comes from that place of like individual responsibility,
yes.
which I think is a total place of privilege.
Yeah, it's a privileged mindset because it's imagining that the playing field is level and even and that everyone comes from the same.
Right.
And even when, especially when it comes from someone like him who is an immigrant who came from working class background, that's an even more dangerous rhetoric because he's like, look, see, I did it. And anyone can. And it's
I
like,
hate that.
No, dude, you did it. Congratulations. But you also did it in a shady way right. where you pandered to a bunch of people who are frankly racist and, you know, exclusionist.
And we'll turn on you too.
100%.
Like Act 6, where your kid just got killed by terrorists for going to Pakistan to uh-huh. be with a girl that he got duped by.
Uh-huh.
Bet that doesn't go over very well for your bid at Downing Place.
Nope.
My guy. Like, don't
Shamsi,
think that's
you better write the yeah. sequel to this because I want to see how Karamat gets dragged through
gets
the coals.
Dragged.
I forgot who said it that, like, America as a melting pot, that image isn't all great for immigrants and people of color. It'd be better to think of it like a stew or a gumbo.
Oh my
because
God, we talked about this 2 weeks ago on the show.
Did you? Yeah. Whose quote was it?
I don't know. We were talking. I was just saying that like the melting pot makes America into like a puree soup.
Yeah.
And it would be much better if it was like a chicken noodle.
Literally, because it's like you have to lose your shape to blend in as right. opposed to like you can maintain your shape. We can just all coexist.
We can like make a good flavor, a good mix. Like we could have a strong roux.
Yeah.
But like, can I just be a carrot?
Can I be a potato?
Yeah. Can I just live my life? Like, do I need to be the same as you for you to be okay being around me?
And you don't want to be the same as me because you're very individual,
right.
white madam.
Right. You don't want to be me. You don't want this black life. But it's this book that we talked about. We read this book called Open City, and it talks a lot about religion and kind of actually a similar kind of topic as this book, but told in a totally different way. But we talked a lot about how like religion, Muslimness post 9/11 in America and in this book in London or in the UK is the same as blackness in America in the sense that it's treated, not that the roots are the same, obviously, like right. the histories are different, but like the way that it's treated currently is that it's like this is something terrible that we have to get rid of or like that we need to push to the sides and that we need to be monitoring and that we need to be cracking down on. And I just, that parallel, it had never dawned on me that parallel. And now all of a sudden I feel like I see it everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even if it's, because even if people in this country don't think they're saying we don't want black people here, even if they are kind of saying that.
Right.
What they are saying is you can be here, but you need to be less black. You need to be less like that. You need to be less militant. You need to obey when a police officer says, get out of the car. You need to do that. You know,
right.
They're saying you need to conform in the same way, in a similar way to how they might say you need to eschew your Islamic heritage and culture in order to just blend in and just be a nice, normal brown person for our white feelings. And it is so, I mean, God, I just think about in Chicago when they canceled the Southside Irish parade because it was too rowdy. And white Irish people, and Irish, I'm using loosely, white people who like to drink in Chicago who maybe had an Irish ancestor lost their minds. They were like, how dare you strip us of our heritage? And the city was literally like, you have another parade on the north side the next day. We're just ending this one because it's expensive, because y'all break shit, because it's dangerous, and we don't have the resources. And people lost their mind about them being stripped of their cultural whatever and still had one anyway. That's true. Watch whiteness work. These
That's
people
right.
just still did one of their own, just unlicensed, just drinking in the streets. But I'm like, can you imagine? Can you imagine if black people did that?
Right.
They'd send in the National Guard.
Well, I mean, of course, and it would be a riot, not an uprising, and certainly not a parade.
Oh, no.
Never be considered a parade.
Oh,
that's
no,
for
not be called
sure.
a parade. It'd be called an activist, an angry mob.
Right. I wonder, actually, if the more apt parallel to Muslimness post 9/11 in the quote-unquote Western world, whatever that means, is our current situation on the border in America. Because it's like, because blackness is so much a part of Americanness, whereas like this like new thing, not that new, but relatively new thing where we hate immigration.
Yeah.
Like apparently now we, the country with a fucking Statue of Liberty that's like, bring us your huddled masses, is now like, we hate immigration.
It's almost comical. If it wasn't so awful.
Yeah. If our
almost,
whole identity didn't revolve around loving immigrants.
Truly our entire identity. Our entire bullshit lore that we were told about the Mayflower and coming here to escape blah, blah, blah. Now
and
we've
that, like,
turned upside down.
It used to be like, we're all immigrants was like, yes, we love immigrants. And now it's like, we're all immigrants, so we can't have any more immigrants. There's like, it's like, wait, you've literally flipped your entire
script, especially for how young this country is. Like, I think about old ass European countries that I'm like, I get why y'all are getting real racist and nationalist is because your grandparents, 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 grandparents have been here for centuries.
Like, your family member is Julius Caesar.
Yeah.
Like, I feel you. Like,
you can trace your roots back to the 1200s.
You know Sophocles, actually. Like, Antigone was your relative.
Right? Like, I get you have a quilt that she made and you're like, that was passed down. I get that. So y'all are starting to get real protective and you don't want a bunch of people coming in and taking your old trash. I don't know.
Yeah.
But for us here, this country has existed for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
We have had, I mean, we know we have ancestors who were owned by other people.
Right.
So, like, we are so young to suddenly be turning that. Like, we're going to wear ourselves out. We're about to implode.
Right. It's true. And I fucking hate we're all immigrants. I was like, look, some people weren't. Some people were native.
Nope.
But some of us also, we were brought here.
We were grabbed.
You want to call that immigration? Do you consider kidnapping like a date? Like, what's the rules here?
It is so wild to me how some people don't. And I'm like, I'm not a person who talks about slavery a lot because I'm like, we all know, right? Does everyone know? But I am continually astounded by the number of people who, we were just talking about those 23andMe and those like Ancestry.com tests, people who don't get that like, I can't go on a database and trace my heritage.
No.
Like, I can't. I was just, somebody just asked me recently, Newsom, what is that? And I went, a slave owner? Like, that? I don't know. England, probably. And they were like, oh, I just thought maybe. I'm like, you thought what? Like, none of us have our names.
No.
But people don't real or it doesn't occur to them.
Yes. That's when people ask me what I am. I usually say I'm Jewish. My mom's like Jewish, like, you know, from Russia, basically. And I'm like Jewish and slave black. Because I'm like, what do you want me to say? I don't have another answer for you.
You hit them with slave black,
slave
Tracy.
Black.
Oh, my God.
Well,
that is hardcore.
I'm not Jamaican.
Yeah, no.
I'm not Kenyan.
Me either.
I mean, I might be. I don't know what I am. But, like, so I just say slave black. My last name is Thomas, for Christ's sake.
Yeah,
like,
how are you even going to trace that?
Thomas is from England. So, surprise, I had English. At some point, some male in my family was owned by, well, most likely the last people in my family that were owned by other people were on the Thomas plantation.
You know what also I just found out is wild? That some slaves changed their name to slave owners that were nicer to them when they were emancipated.
Huh.
So some, if anyone helped them or was an abolitionist.
So maybe they weren't on the Thomas plantation most recently, but possibly.
I found that out when I was trying to trace some shit and was like, okay, I know we're Newsom's from Georgia. Mm-hmm. And then there were like seven that owned slaves in Georgia. And I was like, okay, you own 23, you own 15. I can figure this out. And then on my maternal grandmother's side, she had all on my dad's side, but I don't know how to say it. Anyway, the other side were Garretsons, and they were but I traced the Garretson history, and they were all abolitionists. They were all like from Denmark and shit. So I'm like, oh, so my black ancestor like changed their name to those
like
people.
They
probably
met a Garretson.
Yeah, and like needed a new last name because they didn't want to be the Jacksons anymore.
Right. They didn't want to be like a Jefferson.
Yeah, they were like, that slave owner beat me. Can I not have this name anymore?
I'll trade you for any other white name possible.
Anyway, welcome back to our podcast
about
being black
about
is
Muslim.
Weird.
Yeah. Welcome. Being black is weird.
And fuck your ancestry.com test. I'm sick of hearing about how you're one third Iberian or whatever the fuck.
What I wouldn't give to just know.
Oh, I would love to know.
Yeah, I have a friend who his family is from Virginia, white guy, and his whole life he was told like, oh, we were too poor to have slaves. Like, we didn't have slaves. Mm-hmm. We were just like, and then he found like logs.
It's called the census. It's been going back a long time, and they don't put slaves' names in it, but they'll put your white ancestor's name, right, and they'll put how many.
Right.
It'll just be a number.
Right. Well, he found like logs of the slaves from his, like, ooh. Like he was like, you guys had this just laying around. You guys were trying to tell me that we were too poor. And it's just like a crazy thing. I don't envy him for having to learn about it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I also am like, lucky you.
Yeah, actually.
Like, it's kind of nice that you still get to know. Like, no one's saying that you're a slave owner.
No.
But like, you know.
But like, I'm not crying too hard about you finding out that,
right,
you
own. Or like when people are like, oh, I just discovered racism. I'm like, congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, you want a fucking cookie?
Yeah.
Like, where have you been?
Where have you been? So, like, welcome to the fight. But, like, some, yes, of us are you know, purple-hearted generals.
Right.
And
but also, like, legitimately, where were you hiding? Can I go to that place that doesn't involve knowing about racism in the white-ish world?
I bet you could go to that world, but you'd have to have, like, full like white chicks level white face.
Yeah.
You know the movie White Chicks where you have like full prosthetic, a blonde wig.
Oh my God.
And just like go live in Palm Springs.
And you have
or something
to be a Wayans brother also. Isn't that who it is? The Wayans,
yes, brothers. Wayans brothers.
What a nightmare. This is what I love most about this podcast is that we're talking about a very lovely book about, uh-huh, like ISIS in London, and somehow we're talking about White Chicks, the film in Palm Springs, the reboot.
I always try to bring up White Chicks whenever I can.
Okay, well, check. Nailed it. Congratulations.
Did it.
You did it. I'm trying to think if there's anything else really like about this book that I want to get into.
Oh, I have a question for,
yes,
you. Did you know as soon as Anika stepped on the train with him and was like, where do you live? Did you know what her plan was?
No. Did you know?
Yeah.
I knew
just because I could tell how calculating she was, and I knew that from the way we learned about her in Isma's chapter. I'm like, there is no way she would cozy up to this guy. She's not a woman driven by lust.
That's true.
Like her lustful escapades that they would kind of hint at all seemed very like calculated and just kind of like, I'm young and this is what I'm doing right now.
See, I chalked it up more for her being like young and like the sex was good.
I
but
think
you're smarter than me.
Well, no, I just knew. I mean, probably just because I look at characters that I would like want to play and I,
yeah,
like try and figure that out, even when I'm reading books. So I'm looking at her and I'm like, oh man, if this was a movie and I was like younger, this is a type of a role. I'm obviously not Pakistani, so that wouldn't work. But I was just thinking about like, oh, what's in this character's head? Like, there's,
right,
no way she's after this guy because he's hot.
Do you think she ever loved him?
Yeah, I think it got there. Because isn't that always the best story where it's,
yeah,
like, you were doing this. You know, it's the, what's that movie?
How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days?
Yes, or what was the one with Rachel Lee Cook where it's like, she's not pretty. Take
she's
off
all
glasses.
That.
Yeah, she's all that. See, it's
so
the she's
good.
All that. It was a dare, but then they fell in love.
Right. Well, wait. Okay, this is one of the things. This was one of the moments where I was like, Anika is all in. When the whole thing got exposed and then Isma like came back and was like, you know, I'm so sorry, whatever. And then Anika was like, you were with him and you didn't even think to do this. And I was like, yo, Anika, you girl, you're tripping right now. Like that you think that that is like, duh, when you go to McDonald's, you get French fries. Like to her, it was like, you wear goggles in the pool.
She is, you know, I know we've been talking about Isma being pragmatic, but I mean, Anika is a hustler and Anika knows her currency.
Right.
You know, she's like got a sharp mind
and shit. Like yep. I was like, girl,
she was smart and calculating. And I get that she's like, why didn't this occur to you to try and cozy up to this man? You had him.
Right. Right.
Oof.
Yeah. That scene where she was like, you're just jealous and I'm mad that you didn't think to do this.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, sisters. I don't have any sisters. I have half sisters, but they're much older and it's not like that.
You wouldn't be talking like that.
No. No.
I don't have any siblings, so I don't know how anything I read with siblings, I'm just like, is this how y'all talk to each other? This seems stressful.
I have a brother that I really like, actually. So, but I don't know if I mean, this is a major question. Like, would you, I'm not an extreme person. So I don't know if I could be an Anika. I unfortunately think I'm more of an Isma, which is a lovely person. Not unfortunately, but like.
I'm more of an Isma. I'm more of a play it safe and then talk a lot of loud shit about it later.
Yeah, I'd write a lot of letters. I would write a letter a day. I would be like one of those postcarding white ladies who send Nancy Pelosi letters. You know, like I'd be sending Jeff Flake some postcards.
Yep.
Fuck that guy. Sorry, did I say that? I fucking hate Jeff Flake. He's gone though.
Good for you.
So happy. Yeah. Oh, there's one more section, one more thing in this book that I just have to get off my chest.
What?
There's the part towards the end. It's like one of the last pages where Eamon says to Karamat, like, this is my truth. And then Karamat's like, when did we become a thing about my truth? Like this, like egocentric, like my truth. And I have to say, I'm team Karamat on that.
Mm.
My truth is garbage to me because I think that there is truth and then there is relationship to truth. But mm-hmm. I feel like this idea that there's multiple truths or facts that like something that is true to you is the truth is not, I don't like that framing. And maybe that's more like semantics, but it really gets under my skin. Like you're allowed to have your own opinions and your own feelings about things and things can resonate with you. But I feel like truth is a thing.
Yeah.
Like a fact is a thing.
I agree. And what you're talking about is like your perspective on the truth, your expected attitude, that your lens comes from all the different things that make you.
Right. But that doesn't make that thing truth.
What I struggled with that, though, is because I agree with you. I do think it's a little semantical because when I read that, I was like, oh, this is – they're talking about the conservative style talking points that mm-hmm. we get from people like Tucker Carlson. Because that is something that Tucker Carlson says where he's like, there is no, you know, be true to myself or my truth, your truth. Like there's only the truth. So I'm always wary of things that fall into the mouth of people like that because I'm like, what do you think you're saying here?
Well, but I feel like, see, I associate that with them on the other side of it. I associate it with like fake news, like that you could just say something is the truth and because it's true to you, therefore it's now the truth. Like the Tucker Carlson or like what's the crazy InfoWars guy.
Oh, Alex Jones. Yes. Yeah.
That he could say, this is a fact.
Yes.
And it's not a fact, but because a white man has said it and put it out into the world, therefore it becomes fact. Or that when the president says something is fake news, or when Sarah Huckabee Sanders gets up there and lies about something but says, you know, it's the facts. It's the truth.
Right.
Look it up. Like, that's what I was thinking about.
I totally agree with you. And I think that we're right. And I think that the other side is using the same language. So it's almost like we need better language.
More language.
And maybe smarter people than me who are like scholars and shit have more vocabulary for this. But what the other side is saying is they're using it as a way to deny privilege and diversity of perspective and privilege lenses.
Right.
They're using it as a way to say like, no, 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 there's one objective truth. The facts are the facts. It doesn't matter if you're disabled or gay or whatever. And so they're using it as a way to deny people's individual experiences as it relates to that truth.
Right.
That's where I get really
agree with that, too.
All using the same weird –
we're using the same word. It's the wrong word.
Right. And the way Karamat is using it is, I think, more in line with that.
Oh, see, I think – I mean, I don't know. I think – sure, it is and it's not because the son is like saying like, I loved her and she loved me and that's my truth and like I felt that.
Right.
And to me, I think that that kind of stuff is like – it's just, that's not the truth. Like, that's, I think the word he could have used is like, that's my experience. I felt these things, or as my boss would say, feelings aren't facts, which I love and hate. But like, there is some, there's this idea that because you experience something, that that is the end. Mm-hmm. And that's what I hate.
That's true. I guess I was only drawing that from how they've painted Karma from the beginning. Right. So I was like, oh, of course he's got to be using one of these.
In a terrible way.
But you're right. I mean, I don't remember the wording as specifically, but.
Right. It's on page 257. I have it in my notes if you want to go back
and
check your
book. Look at you with your notes.
I take some notes because, my God, it's too many pages.
It's good. It's useful. It makes you educated about what you're talking about instead of me that's like, I think this guy came over here.
Okay. So just the last things that we always like to talk about are the title and the cover. And so just so you know, this cover that we have is the American cover, but there is a British cover. So we have like the pink and blue and kind of purple green swirly cover, and then there's one that's red, black, and yellow, and there's like two people in the middle. And
look it up.
Yeah, look it up. Do you see the cover?
Yeah. Oh wow, is it that?
Yeah, that's it. So it's a little bit different.
Yeah. I don't like that one as much.
I like ours better. Ours is prettier, I think.
I'm sure it was like designed exactly this way. It's like Americans want a pretty thing that looks like a rose
with like pink.
Yeah, which is so funny when you think about marketing and stuff. So are they imagining that this is targeted towards women?
Yes.
Yeah, it's very tart. Whereas this British cover is very like Saul Bass almost design, kind of.
It's like tough.
Mm-hmm.
The British cover is definitely more.
It looks
more
a little
tough.
Scary.
And it looks like the British cover to me looks like a more like a thriller. And ours looks more like a love story.
Yeah. God, that's so interesting how they play with our minds.
Right. So, because like for me, when I was reading the book, I was like, oh, this is like kind of a thriller, weirdly. Like, I don't want to put it down.
Mm-hmm.
But the love story part felt totally correct. And I wonder if I'd picked up the other cover, if I would have been like, oh, this is also kind of a love story in the middle of this thriller.
Yeah, which I guess I don't want to be surprised by a love story if I'm trying to read a thriller. I'd rather be surprised that it's a thriller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that. And I also loved that this book was just like, had a lot of plot, because I love plot and I don't love character so much.
Oh, interesting.
Like if a book is just like about people, like, being, I don't like
ennui.
That. Yeah, I much prefer plot. So I like that this book had good characters, but they were like driving towards something.
Yeah.
Which I think we could probably also thank Sophocles for some of that, because.
Thank you, Sophocles.
Even though that play doesn't really do a lot. What did you think of the title?
I hadn't given it much thought, and then it didn't really resonate with me. It didn't resonate much with me, but it kind of let. I guess I sort of like titles that don't lay too much on the the plot. So I remember reading it and thinking, like, why is it called this? And then I had some opinions, but it didn't really matter in the end.
Yeah, I don't – the title to me does not feel connected to the story.
It feels kind of inconsequential, which I'm kind of okay with, because if it had been called, like, something really on the nose, I think I'd be annoyed.
Like – family of terrorists, or something. Or like terror in London,
or like a brother siblings divided.
Right. I mean, it could have been called Anika, but that would have been like too.
I might not have been as excited to read it.
That's true.
Because I think I would have thought with this cover and with like a woman's name on it, I would have been like, oh boy.
Yeah,
this
that's
is some
true.
Soft shit, you know.
That's true. The publisher who does this, Riverhead, they have the most beautiful covers.
Really?
Their books are always so beautiful. There's the woman who's in charge of like their art department. Her name's Helen something. I wish I could remember. And she's got fantastic taste, and the books are just always so beautiful.
The cover art is by Ben Denzer.
Thank you, Ben, for your service. We like
great
it.
Great job.
So the last thing is, we always talk about if you would cast the movie.
Yes.
Who do you have? Well, first of all, movie or TV show?
Okay, so I think one of my favorite shows in recent years has been Homeland. And so I was kind of like, oh my gosh, to have like something set in a similar world to Homeland, not this would be very different, but to have like brown female protagonists would be like my dream. That said, you get to like the fifth and sixth season of something like this, it's gonna be a mess.
No, I think this is a movie for sure.
A movie would be very succinct and like plot driving, but then also we don't get, you know, could we're do gonna like a, lose so much of this.
You could do like a mini series, like a 5-part.
I would accept a miniseries. I would also accept 2 amazing seasons on HBO. Like just 2 seasons, 8 episodes each.
Okay.
You don't get to wander around, but you get enough character development. Because I find nowadays when I watch movies, I'm really annoyed. I'm like, I didn't get to know these people well enough.
Right. They're like too short now.
Yeah, because we're
used to like 22 binging. Episodes yep. binging Orange is the New Black or something.
Yep. But it can't want. But even that, like Orange wandered and I yeah. went like, oh, I don't want this anymore.
Yeah.
But like The Leftovers, man, that thing stayed true. I loved
know
it.
That one.
Oh, my God. It's on HBO. It's weird.
Is it scary?
I love it. No, it's more like spooky, like what's happened to this town and world. Nothing's like jump out and scary though.
Okay.
And nothing's gross.
Okay. Good.
It's more like mind psychological mm-hmm. stuff. There is a lot of character though, so you might not love it.
I like a character. I like acting. I don't like to, I don't know. So complicated. I have so many problems with everything.
The Leftovers is a good one. If you watch the pilot, you'll know if you'll like it or
okay.
not.
Okay. Good to know. Who would you cast in your 16 episode two parters?
Okay. So most of the Pakistani actors I know have like a comedy
okay.
lens to them. So. And no one is quite young enough, but
right.
that's just because I'm older.
No one's ever young enough, though, I don't think. I think people always play.
Yeah. So they've just got to look like. Okay. So there's a girl I know named Malzim Makar. She is from Chicago, but I know her. She's great. She's funny. I forget what she was on. I just know her as like an actress around mm-hmm. town. I think she'd make an amazing Anika because she's like so sharp. And like I know her and she scares me sometimes because she's just like a tough lady. And I think she's naturally very funny, even though, oh, she was on that show Champions. That's something that people might have seen. Yeah. I never know what people watch. I'm always like referencing shows and everyone's like, what's
never
that?
Never heard of it. Yeah.
It's on NBC. Go look it up. It was cute. It got canceled.
It'll be in the show notes. Don't worry.
Malzim would be a great Anika. I think our Karamat Loan, I'm going to go ahead and put in everyone's beloved Kumail Nanjiani.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that.
I think giving him a role like this where he gets to be like, I mean, kind of despicable.
Right.
Like,
but he also is kind of funny. Remember he puts the fish in the bed and stuff.
Oh,
like
yeah.
he does seem to be kind of like a charming, lovely dude, except for that he's a piece of shit politician.
Yeah, he's a piece of shit. He's like, and even that fish in the bed thing was like a very sexist. Like
yeah.
he's calling his ex-girlfriend a dead fish.
Right.
Like I'd love to see, because Kumail's so lovely and woke and sweet and always on the right side of shit. I'd love to see him play a role where he's just on the
bad
wrong.
Guy.
Yeah, just the bad guy. From the show A Series of Unfortunate Events, which is on Netflix, and from a show I did with him called Nobodies, my friend Usman Ali would be a great Parvez. He's too old, but whatever. We'll just up the ages of everybody.
It's a good makeup, people.
Yeah.
You see what they do on This Is Us.
You're right.
They look like 17 sometimes.
They do all kinds of stuff. So this has to have enough budget behind it, which is, again, why we're pitching it to HBO.
Perfect.
Hello, HBO executives.
Yes.
Please buy this. Yeah, so I think Usman would be great for that role, although he has said that he's turning down terrorist roles.
Got it.
Which I'm like, fair, 100% fair. But maybe he would consider this because I'm clearly show running this, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I'm show running it, and then I'm writing a role in for myself, which is like their black friend who lives down the street, who's always like, girl, they went by your house again. You got to talk to them.
I don't
have an Isma. Do you have an Isma?
No. Well, I had a harder time because I couldn't come up with really any Pakistani people. So then I did like generally Middle Eastern because I feel like that's kind of how it works when you're of color. But then when I started looking up Middle Eastern actresses, I kept finding lists of like 20 hottest Middle Eastern. And I was like, fuck this. So
yeah,
then I stopped looking.
Rough.
I was like, this is fucking garbage. Like, what about normal looking Middle Eastern women? What about just like good Middle Eastern actresses?
Yeah.
And like, this is my own thing. I don't watch a ton of stuff, so I often like don't know people. But like,
sure, girl, I'm literally naming my friends.
Right.
I'm like,
I mean, like, I think that like the obvious like Hollywood person would be like having like Priyanka Chopra play Anika, like it's like Quantico. But
and, like, Riz Ahmed could be Parvez.
Oh yeah. Well, also, so we had Behzad Dabu on the show.
I know,
Behzad. He's Chicago. He could be an interesting Parvez because he kind of has like that naivete about him. But I also thought if I wanted to have like the big Hollywood, like fucking insanely amazing actor, I would consider not exactly the right coloring, who knows, but Rami Malek.
Oh, sure. He's Egyptian.
Yeah.
I think people would take issue, but it's also
sure. But like you guys let Scarlett Johansson play Asian. So like, uh-huh. what are we talking uh-huh. about? Like,
we're doing our best. We're doing our best. We're just trying to get brown people some work.
We're just trying to get some work. But I think, like, as far as acting goes, I would love to see him.
It would be interesting for me to see Rami Malek in the Ayman role.
Sure, that too.
Because...
Or Riz Ahmed in the Ayman role.
Yeah.
Because he's got those big brown eyes. It's just so sweet.
See, now we're just like, who is beautiful?
That's right.
This is a podcast called Who is Beautiful?
This is also what the movie TV section turns into, is like, what are the most... Because the truth about me is that I actually only like to watch things with beautiful people, which I know is not right. But like, I love Grey's Anatomy because they're lovely to look at and they're so diverse.
You are so funny. I don't think I've ever seen a full episode of Grey's Anatomy. Isn't that wild?
I don't think I've ever not seen every episode of Grey's Anatomy.
Well, we're perfect. Well, I'll bring you to parties and you can talk about it. Okay, so for Yzma, this was difficult, but I think Sunita Mani, she's on Glow. She's also in Mr. Robot.
Okay.
I don't know if she's Pakistani, so maybe I'm wrong, but she's great. She's like, I loved seeing her in Mr. Robot because I was like, oh, this is like a very serious, like great actress. And then watching her on Glow, I was like, oh, she's funny as shit. So I think it's important to me that all these people
also be able to be funny.
Yeah, just because all of the characters are in their own way and it's very subtle. I mean, Parvez is a little humorless, but I mean,
but in a show, you could add some fun. Yeah. Put him around Anika. Let us see them interact a little bit. You got some charm going.
Because his section was the smallest. Yeah. Parvez's. I feel like if we had more, we'd see more of his personality and less of his just like militant, you know.
The radicalizing of Parvez.
Yeah, we needed more of that because I didn't really see how he suddenly became this like.
Right.
You know.
Just Farouk was like, your dad, like Google it.
Ooh, Farouk.
That was rough.
Yeah, that was
tough. I didn't like that. It just is hard because it's like. There are genuinely bad people of all shapes, sizes, colors, and whatever. And I don't like to see that. Mm-hmm. I don't like to see the radicalizing of anybody. Like, it makes me uncomfortable and sad knowing that, like, people are manipulated and then do bad things. Or people genuinely believe terrible things and aren't manipulated. And, like, you're not radicalized. You just believe crazy shit. And that's tough, too.
There's some really scary stuff about how the radicalization of like white supremacists happens on YouTube. Ooh, it's a topic for another podcast, but really looking into, because part of my naivete is like, oh, well, as thinking, smart, intelligent people who aren't born racist, it should be easy for people to see how these claims and these, you know, philosophies are easily proved false. But the way that the information is so insidious and the way that it grows and swells and the way that you are looking at, you know, one person's account who's just talking about like atheism or maybe just something that seems like kind of innocuous. And then one person says something that's really a little bit more anti-Semitic than anything else. But he also said some funnier things or some interesting things. So you go to his channel. And as you're watching his channel, someone on his channel says something that's like kind of fucked up about Muslims. So then you like go to his channel. And so you just get further down this literal rabbit hole. The same way that we do with like the way that I do with like J-Lo music videos. Sure. And I'll just be like, oh, who directed that one? Let me see more stuff he did.
My drug is Janet Jackson music videos.
Oh, my God. Yes. Easily.
Choreography.
Yeah. 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm just like, was the Velvet Rope the first album where she had that, you know? But imagine you're doing that, but for literally for hate groups and you don't even fully realizing it. You're thinking you're just like getting outside the box, man.
Right.
And they talk about how, especially with young people, it's so insidious and so dangerous.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, on that positive note.
No. Say something fun.
Yay, Janet Jackson. The always If music Janet video. Jackson. Always, every day. If you come to my flywheel class, Tani knows it's always Janet Jackson.
When are you
Beyonce.
Doing another all Janet class?
I'm doing a Lemonade versus Rhythm Nation ride.
Yes, I'll be there.
I'll let you know when. I haven't decided a date. Okay. All of you people, please travel to LA. Come to my lunch on. Well, Tani, thank you so much for coming on. I'm so happy. Everyone, check out Tani's podcast, Yo, Is This Racist? All her stuff is in the show notes. And that's all. Thank you so much, Tani.
Thank you.
Yay. Bye. Thank you for listening to today's episode. And thank you to Tani Newsom for being our guest. For more on The Stacks, follow us on social media using the links in the show notes and see our articles and reviews on the website at thestackspodcast.com. To join The Stacks Pack and to get insider access to this show, like perks and our virtual book club, go to patreon.com/thestacks and join the fun. Make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts, and if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please take a moment to rate and review the show. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tagirages. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas, and I'll see you in the stacks.